That awful sensation returned. The sense of nothingness. The horrible knowledge that someone else had complete and total control over his emotions. Nobody should have that much power over him, especially not Elend.
He should be dead. He came right to me, and I let him go.
Get rid of her, Straff said. Do anything you need to, Zane. Anything. Zane nodded, then walked away with a self-satisfied stroll. Straff returned to his tent and sent for Hossel again. She looked enough like Ellen's girl. It would do him good to remind himself that most of the time, he really was in control. Elend sat back in the carriage, a little stunned. I'm still alive, he thought with growing excitement. I did it. I convinced Straff to leave the city alone. For a time, at least. Luthadel's safety depended on Straff remaining frightened of Vin. But, well, any victory was an enormous one for Elend. He hadn't failed his people. He was their king, and his plan, crazy though it might have seemed, had worked. The small crown on his head suddenly didn't seem as heavy as it had before. Vin sat across from him. She didn't look nearly as pleased as she could have.
We did it, Vin, Elend said. It wasn't what we planned, but it worked. Straff won't dare attack the city now.
She nodded quietly. Elend frowned.
It's because of you that the city will be safe. You know that, right? If you hadn't been there... Well, of course, if it hadn't been for you, the entire Final Empire would still be enslaved.
Because I killed the Lord Ruler, she said quietly.
Elend nodded.
But it was Kelsier's plan. The crew's skills, the people's strength of will that freed the Empire. I just held the knife.
You make it sound like a trivial thing, Vin, he said.
It's not. You're a fantastic Allomancer. Ham says he can't beat you even in an unfair fight anymore. And you've kept the palace free of assassins. There's nobody like you in all of the Final Empire.
Strangely, his words made her huddle into the corner just a little farther. She turned, watching out the window, eyes staring into the mists.
Thank you, she said softly.
Elend wrinkled his brow.
Every time I begin to think I've figured out what's going on in her head.
He moved over, putting an arm around her.
Vin, what's wrong?
She was silent, then finally shook her head, forcing a smile.
It's nothing, Elend. You're right to be excited. You were brilliant in there. I doubt even Kelsier could have manipulated Straff so neatly.
Elend smiled, and pulled her close, impatient as the carriage rolled up to the dark city. The doors of Tin Gate opened hesitantly, and Elend saw a group of men standing just inside of the courtyard. Ham held aloft a lantern in the mists. Elend didn't wait for the carriage to stop on its own. He opened the door and hopped down as it was rolling to a halt. His friends began to smile eagerly. The gates thumped closed.
It worked?
Ham asked hesitantly as Elend approached.
You did it?
Kind of,
Elend said with a smile, clasping hands with Ham, Breeze, Doxon, and finally Spook. Even the Chandra Orsure was there. He padded over to the carriage, waiting for Vin.
The initial feint didn't go so well. My father didn't bite on an alliance. But then I told him I'd kill him.
Wait, how was that a good idea?
Ham asked.
We overlooked one of our greatest resources, my friends, Elend said, as Vin climbed down from the carriage.
Elend turned, waving his hand toward her.
We have a weapon like nothing they can match. Straff expected me to come begging, and he was ready to control that situation. However, when I mentioned what would happen to him and his army if Vin's anger was roused...
My dear man, Breeze said, you went into the camp of the strongest king in the Final Empire, and you threatened him?
Yes, I did.
Brilliant.
I know, Ellen said. I told my father that he was going to let me leave his camp, and that he was going to leave Luthadel alone. Otherwise, I'd have Vin kill him and every general in his army.
He put his arm around Vin. She smiled at the group, but he could tell that something was still troubling her.
She doesn't think I did a good job, Ellen realized. She saw a better way to manipulate Straff, but she doesn't want to spoil my enthusiasm.
Well, guess we won't need a new king, Spook said with a smile. I was kind of looking forward to taking the job.
Ellen laughed.
I don't intend to vacate the position for quite some time yet. We'll let the people know that Straff has been cowed, if temporarily. That should boost morale a bit. Then we deal with the Assembly. Hopefully they'll pass a resolution to wait for me to meet with Set like I just did with Straff.
Shall we have a celebration back at the palace? Breeze asked. As fond as I am of the mists, I doubt the courtyard is an appropriate place to be discussing these issues.
Ellen patted him on the back and nodded. Hammond Oxen joined him and Vin, while the others took the carriage they'd come in. Ellen glanced oddly at Doxson as he climbed into the carriage. Ordinarily, the man would have chosen the other vehicle, the one Ellen wasn't in.
Honestly, Ellen, Ham said as he settled into his seat, I'm impressed. I half thought we were going to have to raid that camp to get you back.
Ellen smiled, eyeing Doxson, who sat down as the carriage began moving. He pulled open his satchel and took out a sealed envelope. He looked up and met Ellen's eyes.
This came from the Assembly members for you a short time ago, Your Majesty.
Ellen paused. Then he took it and broke the seal. What is it?
I'm not sure, Doxson said. But I've already started hearing rumors.
Vin leaned in, reading over Ellen's arm as he scanned the sheet inside. Your Majesty, it read, this note is to inform you that by majority vote the Assembly has decided to invoke the Charter's no-confidence clause. We appreciate your efforts on behalf of the city, but the current situation calls for a different kind of leadership than Your Majesty can provide. We take this step with no hostility, but only resignation. We see no other alternative and must act for the good of Luthadel. We regret to have to inform you of this by letter. It was signed by all 23 members of the Assembly. Ellen lowered the paper, shocked.
What?
Ham asked.
I've just been deposed, Ellen said quietly.
The end of part two. Part three. King.
He left ruin in his wake, but it was forgotten. He created kingdoms and then destroyed them as he made the world anew.
28.
Let me see if I understand this correctly, Tyndall said, calm and polite, yet somehow still stern and disapproving. There is a clause in the kingdom's legal code that lets the Assembly overthrow their king?
Ellen wilted slightly.
Yes.
And you wrote the law yourself? Tyndall demanded.
Most of it, Ellen admitted.
You wrote into your own law a way that you can be deposed? Tyndall repeated.
Their group, expanded from those who had met in the carriages to include Clubs, Tyndall, and Captain Demu, sat in Ellen's study. The group's size was such that they'd run out of chairs, and Vin sat quietly at the side on a stack of Ellen's books, having quickly changed to trousers and shirt. Tyndall and Ellen were standing, but the rest were seated. Breeze prim, Ham relaxed, and Spook trying to balance his chair as he leaned back on two legs.
I put in that clause intentionally, Ellen said.
He stood at the front of the room, leaning with one arm against the glass of his massive stained-glass window, looking up at its dark shards.
This land wilted beneath the hand of an oppressive ruler for 1,000 years.
During that time, philosophers and thinkers dreamed of a government where a bad ruler could be ousted without bloodshed. I took this throne through an unpredictable and unique series of events, and I didn't think it right to unilaterally impose my will, or the will of my descendants, upon the people. I wanted to start a government whose monarchs would be responsible to their subjects.
Sometimes he talks like those books he reads, Vin thought. Not like a normal man at all, but like words on a page.
Zane's words came back to her, seeming to whisper in her mind, "You aren't like him." She pushed the thought out.
"With respect, Your Majesty," Tyndall said, "this has to be one of the most foolish things I've ever seen a leader do."
"It was for the good of the kingdom," Ellen said.
"It was sheer idiocy," Tyndall snapped. "A king doesn't subject himself to the whims of another ruling body. He is valuable to his people because he is an absolute authority."
Vin had rarely seen Ellen so sorrowful, and she cringed a bit at the sadness in his eyes. However, a different piece of her was rebelliously happy. He wasn't king anymore. Now maybe people wouldn't work so hard to kill him. Maybe he could just be Ellen again, and they could leave. Go somewhere. A place where things weren't so complicated.
"Regardless," Doxson said to the quiet room, "something must be done. Discussing the prudence of decisions already passed has little current relevance."
"Agreed," Ham said. "So the Assembly tried to kick you out. What are we going to do about it?"
"We obviously can't let them have their way," Breeze said. "Why, the people overthrew a government just last year. This is a bad habit to be getting into, I should think."
"We need to prepare a response, Your Majesty," Doxson said. "Something decrying this deceitful maneuver, performed while you were negotiating for the very safety of the city. Now that I look back, it's obvious that they arranged the meeting so that you couldn't be present and defend yourself."
Ellen nodded, still staring up at the dark glass. "There's probably no need to call me Your Majesty anymore, Dox."
"Nonsense," Tyndall said, arms folded as she stood beside a bookcase. "You are still king."
"I've lost the mandate of the people," Ellen said.
"Yes," Club said. "But you've still got the mandate of my armies. That makes you king no matter what the Assembly says."
"Exactly," Tyndall said. "Foolish laws aside, you're still in a position of power. We need to tighten martial law, restrict movement within the city, seize control of key points, and sequester the members of the Assembly so that your enemies can't raise a resistance against you."
"I'll have my men on the streets before light," Club said.
"No," Ellen said quietly. There was a pause.
"Your Majesty," Doxson asked, "it really is the best move. We can't let this faction against you gain momentum."
"It's not a faction, Dox," Ellen said. "It's the elected representatives of the Assembly."
"An assembly you formed, my dear man," Breeze said. "They have power because you gave it to them."
"The law gives them their power, Breeze," Ellen said, "and we are all subject to it."
"Nonsense," Tyndall said. "As king, you are the law. Once we secure the city, you can call in the assembly and explain to its members that you need their support. Those who disagree can be held until the crisis is over."
"No," Ellen said, a little more firm. "We will do none of that."
"That's it, then?" Ham asked. "You're giving up?"
"I'm not giving up, Ham," Ellen said, finally turning to regard the group. "But I'm not going to use the city's armies to pressure the assembly."
"You'll lose your throne," Breeze said.
"See reasoned, Ellen," Ham said with a nod.
"I will not be an exception to my own laws," Ellen said.
"Don't be a fool," Tyndall said. "You should—"
"Tyndall," Ellen said, "respond to my ideas as you wish, but do not call me a fool again. I will not be belittled because I express my opinion."
Tyndall paused, mouth partially open.
Then she pressed her lips together and took her seat. Vin felt a quiet surge of satisfaction.
You trained him, Tyndall, she thought with a smile. Can you really complain if he stands up to you?
Elland walked forward, placing his hands on the table as he regarded the group.
Yes, we will respond. Docs, you write a letter informing the Assembly of our disappointment and feelings of betrayal. Inform them of our success with Straff, and lay on the guilt as thickly as possible. The rest of us will begin planning. We'll get the throne back. As has been stated, I know the law. I wrote it. There are ways to deal with this. Those ways do not, however, include sending our armies to secure the city. I will not be like the tyrants who would take Luthadel from us. I will not force the people to do my will, even if I know it is best for them.
Your Majesty, Tyndall said carefully, there is nothing immoral about securing your power during a time of chaos. People react irrationally during such times. That is one of the reasons why they need strong leadership. They need you.
Only if they want me, Tyndall, Ellen said.
Forgive me, Your Majesty, Tyndall said, but that statement seems somewhat naive to me.
Ellen smiled. Perhaps it is. You can change my clothing and my bearing, but you can't change the soul of who I am. I'll do what I think is right, and that includes letting the Assembly depose me if that is their choice.
Tyndall frowned. And if you can't get your throne back through lawful means?
Then I accept that fact, Ellen said, and do my best to help the kingdom anyway.
So much for running away, Vin thought. However, she couldn't help smiling.
Part of what she loved about Ellen was his sincerity, his simple love for the people of Luthadel, his determination to do what was right for them, was what separated him from Kelsier. Even in martyrdom, Kelsier had displayed a hint of arrogance. He'd made certain that he would be remembered like few men who had ever lived. But Elland, to him, ruling the Central Dominance wasn't about fame or glory. For the first time, completely and honestly, she decided something. Elland was a far better king than Kelsier would ever have been.
I'm not certain what I think of this experience, mistress, a voice whispered beside her.
Vin paused, looking down as she realized that she had begun idly scratching Osir's ears. She pulled her hand back with a start.
Sorry, she said.
Osir shrugged, resting his head back on his paws.
So, you said there's a legal way to get the throne back, Am said. How do we go about it?
The Assembly has 1 month to choose a new king, Ellen said. Nothing in the law says that the new king can't be the same as the old one. And if they can't come up with a majority decision by that deadline, the throne reverts to me for a minimum of 1 year.
Complicated, Ham said, rubbing his chin.
What did you expect? Breeze said.
It's the law. I didn't mean the law itself, Ham said. I meant getting the Assembly to either choose Elland or not choose anyone. They wouldn't have deposed him in the first place unless they had another person in mind for the throne.
Not necessarily, Doxon said. Perhaps they simply meant this as a warning.
Perhaps, Elland said. Gentlemen, I think this is a sign. I've been ignoring the Assembly. We thought that they were taken care of since I got them to sign that proposal giving me right of parley. However, we never realized that an easy way for them to get around that proposal was to choose a new king, then have him do as they wished.
He sighed, shaking his head.
I have to admit, I've never been very good at handling the Assembly. They don't see me as a king, but as a colleague, and because of that, they can easily see themselves taking my place. I'll bet one of the Assemblymen has convinced the others to put him on the throne instead.
So we just make him disappear, Ham said. I'm sure Vin could.
Ellen frowned.
I'm joking, El, Ham said.
You know, Ham, Breeze noted, the only funny thing about your jokes is how often they lack any humor whatsoever.
You're only saying that because they usually involve you in the punchline.
Breeze rolled his eyes.
You know,
Orseer muttered quietly, obviously counting on her tin to let Vin hear him.
It seems that these meetings would be more productive if someone forgot to invite those two.
Vin smiled. They're not that bad, she whispered. Orseer raised an eyebrow. Okay, Vin said. They do distract us a little bit.
I could always eat one of them if you wish, Orseer said. That might speed things up.
Vin paused. Orseer, however, had a strange little smile on his lips.
Chandra humor, mistress. I apologize. We can be a bit grim.
Vin smiled.
They probably wouldn't taste very good anyway. Ham's far too stringy, and you don't want to know the kinds of things that Breeze spends his time eating.
I'm not sure, Orseer said. One is, after all, named Ham. As for the other,
he nodded to the cup of wine in Breeze's hand.
He does seem quite fond of marinating himself.
Elland was picking through his stacks of books, pulling out several relevant volumes on law, including the book of Luthadel law that he himself had written.
Your Majesty, Tyndall said, emphasizing the term. You have two armies on your doorstep, and a group of Kolos making their way into the Central Dominance. Do you honestly think that you have time for a protracted legal battle now?
Elland set down the books and pulled his chair to the table.
Tyndall, he said, I have two armies on my doorstep, Kolos coming to pressure them, and I myself am the main obstacle keeping the leaders of this city from handing the kingdom over to one of the invaders. Do you honestly think that it's a coincidence that I get deposed now?
Several members of the crew perked up at this, and Vin cocked her head.
You think one of the invaders might be behind this? Ham asked, rubbing his chin.
What would you do if you were them? Elland said, opening a book. You can't attack the city because it will cost you too many troops. The siege has already lasted weeks, your troops are getting cold, and the men docks and hired have been attacking your canal supply barges, threatening your food supply. And on top of that, you know that a large force of Kolos are marching this way. And, well, it makes sense. If Straff and Set's spies are any good, they'll know that the Assembly just about capitulated and gave the city away when that army first arrived. Assassins have failed to kill me, but if there were another way to remove me...
Yes, Breeze said. This does sound like something Set would do. Turn the Assembly against you, put a sympathizer on the throne, then get him to open the gates.
Elland nodded.
And my father seemed hesitant to side with me this evening, as if he felt he had some other way to get the city. I can't be certain if either monarch is behind this move, Tyndall, but we certainly can't ignore the possibility. This isn't a distraction. This is very much part of the same siege tactics we've been fighting since those armies arrived. If I can put myself back on the throne, then Straff and Set will know that I'm the only one they can work with. And that will hopefully make them more likely to side with me in desperation, particularly as those Kolos draw near.
With that, Elland began riffling through a stack of books. His depression seemed to be abating in face of this new academic problem.
There might be a few other clauses of relevance in the law, he half-mumbled. I need to do some studying.
Spook, did you invite Caesar to this meeting?
Spook shrugged.
I couldn't get him to wake up.
He's recovering from his trip here, Tyndall said, turning away from her study of Elland and his books. It's an issue of the Keepers.
Needs to refill one of his metal mines?
Ham asked. Tyndall paused, her expression darkening.
He explained that to you, then?
Ham and Breeze nodded.
I see, Tyndall said.
Regardless, he could not help with this problem, Your Majesty. I give you some small aid in the area of government because it is my duty to train leaders in knowledge of the past. However, traveling keepers such as Caesid do not take sides in political matters.
Political matters? Breeze asked lightly. You mean perhaps like overthrowing the final empire?
Tyndall closed her mouth, lips growing thin.
You should not encourage him to break his vows, she finally said. If you were his friends, you would see that to be true, I think.
Oh?
Breeze asked, pointing at her with his cup of wine.
Personally, I think you're just embarrassed that he disobeyed you all, but then actually ended up freeing your people.
Tyndall gave Breeze a flat stare, her eyes narrow, her posture stiff. They sat that way for a long moment.
Push on my emotions all you wish, Sutha, Tyndall said. My feelings are my own. You will have no success here.
Breeze finally turned back to his drink, muttering something about damn terrorismen. Elland, however, wasn't paying attention to the argument. He already had four books open on the table before him and was flipping through a fifth. Vin smiled, remembering the days, not so long ago, when his courtship of her had often involved him plopping himself down in a nearby chair and opening a book.
He is the same man, she thought. And that soul, that man is the one who loved me before he knew I was Mistborn. He loved me even after he discovered I was a thief and thought I was trying to rob him. I need to remember that.
Come on, she whispered to Orsier, standing as Breeze and Ham got into another argument. She needed time to think, and the mists were still fresh. This would be a lot easier if I weren't so skilled, Elland thought with amusement, poking through his books. I set up the law too well. He followed a particular passage with his finger, rereading it as the crew slowly trailed away. He couldn't remember if he'd dismissed them or not. Tyndall would probably chastise him for that.
Here, he thought, tapping the page. I might have grounds to argue for a revote if any of the members of the Assembly arrived late to the meeting, or made their votes in absentia. The vote to depose had to be unanimous, save, of course, for the king being deposed.
He paused, noticing movement. Tyndall was the only one still in the room with him. He looked up from his books with resignation.
I probably have this coming. I apologize for treating you with disrespect, Your Majesty.
Elland frowned. Wasn't expecting that.
I have a habit of treating people like children, Tyndall said. It is not something that I should be proud of, I think.
It's... Elland paused. Tyndall had taught him never to excuse people's failings. He could accept people with failings, even forgive them. But if he glossed over the problems, then they would never change.
I accept your apology, he said. You've learned quickly, Your Majesty.
I haven't had much choice, Elland said with a smile. Of course I didn't change fast enough for the Assembly.
How did you let this happen? She asked quietly. Even considering our disagreement over how a government should be run, I should think that these Assemblymen would be supporters of yours. You gave them that power.
I ignored them, Tyndall. Powerful men, friends or not, never like being ignored. She nodded.
Though perhaps we should pause to take note of your successes, rather than simply focusing on your failings. Vin tells me that your meeting with your father went well.
Elland smiled.
We scared him into submission. It felt very good to do something like that to Straff. But I think I might have offended Vin somehow.
Tyndall raised an eyebrow. Elland set down his book, leaning forward with his arms on the desk.
She was in an odd mood on the way back. I could barely get her to talk to me. I'm not sure what it was. Perhaps she was just tired. I'm not convinced that Vin gets tired, Elland said. She's always moving, always doing something. Sometimes I worry that she thinks I'm lazy. Maybe that's why...
He trailed off, then shook his head.
She doesn't think that you are lazy, Your Majesty, Tyndall said. She refused to marry you because she doesn't think that she is worthy of you.
Nonsense, Ellen said. Vin's Mistborn, Tyndall. She knows she's worth 10 men like me.
Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
You understand very little about women, Ellen Venture. Especially young women. To them, their competence has a surprisingly small amount to do with how they feel about themselves. Vin is insecure. She doesn't believe that she deserves to be with you. It is less that she doesn't think she deserves you personally, and more that she isn't convinced that she deserves to be happy at all. She has led a very confusing, difficult life.
How sure are you about this?
I've raised a number of daughters, Your Majesty, Tyndall said. I understand the things of which I speak.
Daughters? Ellen asked. You have children?
Of course.
I just...
The Terrasmen he'd known were eunuchs, like Sazed. The same couldn't be true for a woman like Tyndall, of course, but he'd assumed that the Lord Ruler's breeding programs would have affected her somehow.
Regardless, Tyndall said curtly, you must make some decisions, Your Majesty. Your relationship with Vin is going to be difficult. She has certain issues that will provide more problems than you would find in a more conventional woman.
We've already discussed this, Ellen said. I'm not looking for a more conventional woman. I love Vin.
I'm not implying that you shouldn't, Tyndall said calmly. I am simply giving you instruction, as I have been asked to do. You need to decide how much you're going to let the girl and your relationship with her distract you.
What makes you think I'm distracted?
Tyndall raised an eyebrow.
I asked you about your success with Lord Venture this evening, and all you wanted to talk about was how Vin felt during the ride home.
Ellen hesitated.
Which is more important to you, Your Majesty? Tyndall asked. This girl's love, or the good of your people?
I'm not going to answer a question like that, Ellen said.
Eventually, you may not have a choice, Tyndall said. It is a question most kings face eventually, I fear.
No, Ellen said. There's no reason that I can't both love Vin and protect my people. I've studied too many hypothetical dilemmas to be caught in a trap like that.
Tyndall shrugged, standing.
Believe as you wish, Your Majesty. However, I already see a dilemma, and I find it not at all hypothetical.
She bowed her head slightly in deference, then withdrew from the room, leaving him with his books.
There were other proofs to connect Alendi to the Hero of Ages. Smaller things. Things that only one trained in the lore of the Anticipation would have noticed. The birthmark on his arm. The way his hair turned gray when he was barely 25 years of age. The way he spoke. The way he treated people. The way he ruled. He simply seemed to fit.
29.
Tell me, mistress, Orsier said, lying lazily, head on paws. I have been around humans for a goodly number of years. I was under the impression that they needed regular sleep. I guess I was mistaken.
Vin sat on a wall-top stone ledge, one leg up against her chest, the other dangling over the side of the wall. Keep Hastings' towers were dark shadows in the mists to her right and to her left.
I sleep, she said.
Occasionally,
Orsier yawned a deep, tongue-stretching yawn. Was he adopting more canine mannerisms? Vin turned away from the Chandra, looking east over the slumbering city of Luthadel. There was a fire in the distance, a growing light that was too large to be a man's touch. Dawn had arrived. Another night had passed, making it nearly a week since she and Ellen had visited Straff's army. Zane had yet to appear.
You're burning pewter, aren't you? Orsior asked. To stay awake?
Vin nodded. Beneath a light burn of pewter, her fatigue was only a mild annoyance. She could feel it deep within her, if she looked hard, but it had no power over her. Her senses were keen, her body strong.
Even the night's cold wasn't as bothersome. The moment she extinguished her pewter, however, she'd feel the exhaustion in force.
"That cannot be healthy, mistress," Orsio said. "You sleep barely 3 or 4 hours a day. Nobody, mistborn man or Chandra, can survive on a schedule like that for long."
Vin looked down. How could she explain her strange insomnia? She should be over that. She no longer had to be frightened of the other crew members around her. And yet, no matter how exhausted she grew, she was finding sleep more and more difficult to claim. How could she sleep with that quiet thumping in the distance? It seemed to be getting closer for some reason. Or simply stronger? "I hear the thumping sounds from above, the pulsings from the mountains." Words from the logbook. How could she sleep, knowing that the spirit watched her from the mist, ominous and hateful? How could she sleep when armies threatened to slaughter her friends, when Ellen's kingdom had been taken from him, when everything she thought she'd known and loved was getting muddled and obscure? "When I finally lie down, I find sleep elusive. The same thoughts that trouble me during the day are only compounded by the stillness of night." Orsier yawned again.
"He's not coming, mistress."
Vin turned, frowning.
"What do you mean?" "This is the last place you sparred with Zane," Orsier said. "You're waiting for him to come."
Vin paused.
"I could use a spar," she finally said.
Light continued to grow in the east, slowly brightening the mists. The mists persisted, however, reticent to give way before the sun.
"You shouldn't let that man influence you so, mistress," Orsier said. "I do not think he is the person you believe him to be."
Vin frowned.
"He's my enemy. What else would I believe?" "You do not treat him like an enemy, mistress."
"Well, he hasn't attacked Elland," Vin said. "Maybe Zane isn't fully under Straff's control." Orsier sat quietly, head on paws. Then he turned away.
"What?" Vin asked. "Nothing, mistress. I will believe as I'm told."
"Oh, no," Vin said, turning on the ledge to look at him. "You're not going back to that excuse. What were you thinking?" Orsier sighed.
"I was thinking, mistress, that your fixation with Zane is disconcerting."
"Fixation?" Vin said. "I'm just keeping an eye on him. I don't like having another Mistborn, enemy or not, running around in my city. Who knows what he could be up to?"
Orsier frowned, but said nothing.
"Orsier," Vin said, "if you have things to say, speak."
"I apologize, mistress," Orsier said. "I'm not accustomed to chatting with my masters, especially not candidly."
"It's all right. Just speak your mind."
"Well, mistress," Orsier said, raising his head off his paws, "I do not like this Zane."
"What do you know of him?"
"Nothing more than you," Orsier admitted. "However, most Chandra are very good judges of character. When you practice imitation for as long as I have, you learn to see to the hearts of men. I do not like what I have seen of Zane. He seems too pleased with himself. He seems to deliberate in the way he has befriended you. He makes me uncomfortable."
Vin sat on the ledge, legs parted, hands before her with palms down, resting on the cool stone.
"He might be right."
But Orsier hadn't flown with Zane, hadn't sparred in the mists. Through no fault of his own, Orsier was like Elland, not an Allomancer. Neither of them could understand what it was to soar on a push of steel, to flare tin and experience the sudden shock of 5 heightened senses. They couldn't know. They couldn't understand. Vin leaned back. Then she regarded the wolfhound in the growing light. There was something she'd been meaning to mention, and now seemed as good a time as any.
"Orsier,
You can switch bodies if you want. The wolfhound raised an eyebrow. We have those bones that we found in the palace, Vin said. You can use those if you're tired of being a dog.
I couldn't use them, Orsio said. I haven't digested their body. I wouldn't know the proper arrangement of muscles and organs to make the person look correct.
Well then, Vin said, we could get you a criminal.
I thought you liked these bones on me, Orsio said.
I do, Vin said. But I don't want you to stay in a body that makes you unhappy.
Orsio snorted. My happiness is not an issue.
It is to me, Vin said. We could...
Mistress, Orsio interrupted.
Yes?
I shall keep these bones. I've grown accustomed to them. It is very frustrating to change forms often.
Vin hesitated. All right, she finally said.
Orsio nodded. Though, he continued, speaking of bodies, mistress, are we ever planning to return to the palace? Not all of us have the constitution of a mistborn. Some people need sleep and food on occasion.
He certainly complains a lot more now, Vin thought. However, she found the attitude to be a good sign. It meant Orsio was growing more comfortable with her. Comfortable enough to tell her when he thought she was being stupid. Why do I even bother with Zane? She thought, rising and turning eyes northward.
The mist was still moderately strong, and she could barely make out Straff's army, still holding the northern canal, maintaining the siege. It sat like a spider, waiting for the right time to spring.
Elend, she thought. I should be more focused on Elend.
His motions to dismiss the Assembly's decision or to force a revote had all failed. And stubbornly, lawful as always, Elend continued to accept his failures. He still thought he had a chance to persuade the Assembly to choose him as king, or at least not vote anybody else to the position. So he worked on speeches and planned with Breeze and Doxon. This left him little time for Vin, and rightly so. The last thing he needed was her distracting him. This was something she couldn't help him with, something she couldn't fight or scare away.
His world is of papers, books, laws, and philosophies, she thought. He rides the words of his theories like I ride the mists. I always worry that he can't understand me. But can I really understand him?
Orsio stood, stretched, and placed his forepaws on the wall's railing to raise himself and look north like Vin. Vin shook her head.
Sometimes I wish Elend weren't so... well, noble. The city doesn't need this confusion right now.
He did the right thing, mistress.
You think so?
Of course, Orsio said. He made a contract. It is his duty to keep that contract, no matter what. He must serve his master. In his case, that would be the city, even if that master makes him do something very distasteful.
That's a very Condra-like way of seeing things, Vin said.
Orsio looked up at her, raising a canine eyebrow, as if to ask, well, what did you expect? She smiled. She had to suppress a chuckle every time she saw that expression on his dog face.
Come on, Vin said. Let's get back to the palace.
Excellent, Orsio said, dropping down to all fours. That meat I set out should be perfect by now.
Unless the maids found it again, Vin said with a smile.
Orsio's expression darkened.
I thought you were going to warn them.
What would I say? Vin asked with amusement. Please don't throw away this rancid meat. My dog likes to eat it.
Why not? Orsio asked. When I imitate a human, I almost never get to have a good meal. But dogs eat aged meat sometimes, don't they?
I honestly don't know, Vin said.
Aged meat is delicious.
You mean rotten meat.
Aged, Orsio said insistently, as she picked him up and prepared to carry him down from the wall.
The top of Keep Hastings was a good 100 feet tall, far too high for Osir to jump, and the only path down would be through the inside of the abandoned keep. Better to carry him.
"Aged meat is like aged wine or aged cheese," Osir continued. "It tastes better when it's a few weeks old."
"I suppose that's one of the side effects of being related to scavengers," Vin thought. She hopped up on the lip of the wall, dropping a few coins. However, as she prepared to jump, Osir a large bulk in her arms, she hesitated. She turned one last time, looking out at Straff's army. It was fully visible now. The sun had risen completely above the horizon. Yet a few insistent swirls of mist wavered in the air as if trying to defy the sun, to continue to cloak the city, to stave off the light of day. "Lord Ruler," Vin thought, struck by a sudden insight. She'd been working on this problem so long, it had begun to frustrate her. And now, when she'd been ignoring it, the answer had come to her, as if her subconscious had still been picking it apart.
"Mistress," Osir asked, "is everything all right?"
Vin opened her mouth slightly, cocking her head.
"I think I just realized what the deepness was.
But I must continue with the sparest of detail. Space is limited. The other world-bringers must have thought themselves humble when they came to me, admitting that they had been wrong. Even then, I was beginning to doubt my original declaration. But I was prideful."
30.
"I write this record now," Sazed read, "pounding it into a metal slab, because I am afraid. Afraid for myself, yes. I admit to being human. If Alendi does return from the Well of Ascension, I am certain that my death will be one of his first objectives. He is not an evil man, but he is a ruthless one. That is, I think, a product of what he has been through. I am also afraid, however, that all I have known, that my story, will be forgotten. I am afraid for the world that is to come. Afraid that Alendi will fail. Afraid of a doom brought by the deepness. It all comes back to poor Alendi. I feel bad for him, and for all the things he has been forced to endure. For what he has been forced to become. But let me begin at the beginning. I met Alendi first in Hrenium. He was a young lad then, and had not yet been warped by a decade spent leading armies. Alendi's height struck me the first time I saw him. Here was a man who was small of stature, but who seemed to tower over others. A man who demanded respect. Oddly, it was Alendi's simple ingenuousness that first led me to befriend him. I employed him as an assistant during his first months in the Grand City. It wasn't until years later that I became convinced that Alendi was the Hero of Ages. Hero of Ages. The one called Rabzin in Hlenium. The Anam Nesar. Savior. When I finally had the realization, finally connected all of the signs of the anticipation to him, I was so excited. Yet when I announced my discovery to the other world-bringers, I was met with scorn. Oh, how I wish that I had listened to them. And yet any who know me will realize that there was no chance I would give up so easily. Once I find something to investigate, I become dogged in my pursuit. I had determined that Alendi was the Hero of Ages, and I intended to prove it. I should have bowed before the will of the others. I shouldn't have insisted on traveling with Alendi to witness his journeys. It was inevitable that Alendi himself would find out what I believed him to be. Yes, he was the one who fueled the rumors after that. I could never have done what he himself did, convincing and persuading the world that he was indeed the hero. I don't know if he himself believed it, but he made others think that he must be the one. If only the terrorist religion and belief in the anticipation hadn't spread beyond our people. If only the deepness hadn't come, providing a threat that drove men to desperation, both in action and belief. If only I had passed over Alendi when looking for an assistant all those years ago.
Sazed sat back from his work of transcribing the rubbing. There was still a great deal to do. It was amazing how much writing this Quan had managed to cram onto the relatively small sheet of metal. Sazed looked over his work. He'd spent his entire trip north anticipating the time when he could finally begin work on the rubbing. A part of him had been worried. Would the dead man's words seem as important sitting in a well-lit room as they had when in the dungeons of the Conventicle of Saren? He scanned to another part of the document, reading a few choice paragraphs, ones of particular importance to him.
As the one who found Alendi, however, I became someone important, foremost amongst the world-bringers. There was a place for me in the lore of the Anticipation. I thought myself the announcer, the prophet foretold to discover the Hero of Ages. Renouncing Alendi, then, would have been to renounce my new position, my acceptance by the others. And so I did not. But I do so now. Let it be known that I, Quan, world-bringer of Terrace, am a fraud.
Sazed closed his eyes. World-bringer. The term was known to him. The Order of the Keepers had been founded upon memories and hopes from Terrace legends. The world-bringers had been teachers, ferrochemists who had traveled the lands bearing knowledge. They had been a prime inspiration for the Secret Order of Keepers. And now he had a document made by a world-bringer's own hand.
"Tyndall is going to be very annoyed with me," Sazed thought, opening his eyes.
He'd read the entire rubbing, but he would need to spend time studying it, memorizing it, cross-referencing it with other documents. This one bit of writing, perhaps 20 pages total, could easily keep him busy for months, even years. His window shutters rattled. Sazed looked up. He was in his quarters at the palace, a tasteful collection of well-decorated rooms that were far too lavish for one who had spent his life as a servant. He rose, walked over to the window, undid the latch, and pulled open the shutters. He smiled as he found Vin crouching on the ledge outside.
Hi, Vin said.
She wore her mist cloak over gray shirt and black trousers. Despite the onset of morning, she obviously hadn't yet gone to bed after her nightly prowling.
You should leave your window unlatched. I can't get in if it's locked. Ellen got mad at me for breaking too many latches. I shall try to remember that, Lady Vin, Sazed said, and gesturing for her to enter.
Vin hopped spryly through the window, mist cloak rustling.
"Try to remember?" she asked. "You never forget anything. Not even the things you don't have stuck in a metal mind."
She's grown so much more bold, he thought as she walked over to his writing desk, peering over his work.
Even in the months I've been away.
"What's this?" Vin asked, still looking at the desk.
"I found it at the Conventicle of Saren, Lady Vin," Sazed said, walking forward.
It felt so good to be wearing clean robes again, to have a quiet and comfortable place in which to study. Was he a bad man for preferring this to travel?
"One month," he thought. "I will give myself 1 month of study. Then I will turn the project over to someone else."
"What is it?" Vin asked, holding up the rubbing.
"If you please, Lady Vin," Sazed said apprehensively. "That is quite fragile. The rubbing could be smudged."
Vin nodded, putting it down and scanning his transcription. There had been a time when she would have avoided anything that smelled of stuffy writing, but now she looked intrigued.
"This mentions the deepness," she said with excitement.
Among other things, Sazed said, joining her at the desk. He sat down, and Vin walked over to one of the room's low-backed plush chairs. However, she didn't sit on it as an ordinary person would. Instead, she hopped up and sat down on top of the chair's back, her feet resting on the seat cushion.
What?
She asked, apparently noticing Sazed's smile.
Just amused at a proclivity of Mistborn, Lady Vin, he said. Your kind has trouble simply sitting. It seems you always want to perch instead. That is what comes from having such an incredible sense of balance, I think.
Vin frowned, but passed over the comment. Sazed, she said.
What was the deepness?
He laced his fingers before himself, regarding the young woman as he mused.
The deepness, Lady Vin. That is a subject of much debate, I think. It was supposedly something great and powerful, though some scholars have dismissed the entire legend as a fabrication concocted by the Lord Ruler. There is some reason to believe this theory, I think, for the only real records of those times are the ones sanctioned by the Steel Ministry. But the logbook mentions the deepness, Vin said, and so does that thing you're translating now.
Indeed, Lady Vin, Sazed said. But even among those who assume the deepness was real, there is a great deal of debate. Some hold to the Lord Ruler's official story that the deepness was a horrible supernatural beast, a dark god, if you will. Others disagree with this extreme interpretation. They think the deepness was more mundane, an army of some sort, perhaps invaders from another land. The foremost dominance, during pre-ascension times, was apparently populated with several breeds of men who were quite primitive and warlike.
Vin was smiling. He looked at her questioningly, and she just shrugged.
I asked Elland this same question, she explained, and I got barely a sentence-long response.
His Majesty has different areas of scholarship. Pre-ascension history may be too stuffy a topic even for him. Besides, anyone who asks a keeper about the past should be prepared for an extended conversation, I think.
I'm not complaining, Vin said. Continue.
There isn't much more to say. Or rather, there is a great deal more to say, but I doubt much of it has relevance. Was the deepness an army? Was it perhaps the first attack from Kolos, as some theorize? That would explain much. Most stories agree that the Lord Ruler gained some power to defeat the deepness at the Well of Ascension. Perhaps he gained the support of the Kolos and then used them as his armies.
Sazed, Vin said, I don't think the deepness was the Kolos.
Oh?
I think it was the mist.
That theory has been proposed, Sazed said with a nod.
It has?
Vin asked, sounding a bit disappointed.
Of course, Lady Vin. During the thousand-year reign of the Final Empire, there are few possibilities that haven't been discussed, I think. The mist theory has been advanced before, but there are several large problems with it.
Such as?
Well, Sazed said, for one thing, the Lord Ruler is said to have defeated the deepness. However, the mist is obviously still here. Also, if the deepness was simply mist, why call it by such an obscure name? Of course, others point out that much of what we know or have heard of the deepness comes from oral lore, and something very common can take on mystical properties when transferred verbally through generations. The deepness, therefore, could mean not just the mist, but the event of its coming or alteration. The larger problem with the mist theory, however, is one of malignance. If we trust the accounts, and we have little else to go on, the deepness was terrible and destructive. The mist seems to display none of this danger.
But it kills people now,
Sazed paused.
Yes, Lady Vin, it apparently does.
And what if it did so before, but the Lord Ruler stopped it somehow? You yourself said that you think we did something, something that changed the mist, when we killed the Lord Ruler. Sazed nodded. The problems I have been investigating are quite terrible, to be certain. However, I do not see that they could be a threat on the same level as the deepness. Certain people have been killed by the mists, but many are elderly or otherwise lacking in constitution. It leaves many people alone.
He paused, tapping his thumbs together.
But I would be remiss if I didn't admit some merit to the suggestion, Lady Vin. Perhaps even a few deaths would be enough to cause a panic. The danger could have been exaggerated by retelling, and perhaps the killings were more widespread before. I haven't been able to collect enough information to be certain of anything yet.
Vin didn't respond.
Oh dear, Sazed thought, sighing to himself. I've bored her. I really do need to be more careful, watching my vocabulary and my language. One would think that after all my travels among the Ska, I would have learned...
Sazed? Vin said, sounding thoughtful.
What if we're looking at it wrong? What if these random deaths in the mists aren't the problem at all?
What do you mean, Lady Vin? She sat quietly for a moment, one foot tapping back idly against the chair's back cushion. She finally looked up, meeting his eyes.
What would happen if the mists came during the day permanently?
Sazed mused on that for a moment.
There would be no light, Vin continued. Plants would die, people would starve. There would be death, chaos.
I suppose, Sazed said. Perhaps that theory has merit.
It's not a theory, Vin said, hopping down from her chair. It's what happened.
You're so certain already? Sazed asked with amusement. Vin nodded curtly, joining him at the desk.
I'm right, she said with her characteristic bluntness. I know it.
She pulled something out of a trouser pocket, then drew over a stool to sit beside him. She unfolded the wrinkled sheet and flattened it on the desk.
These are quotes from the logbook, Vin said.
She pointed at a paragraph.
Here the Lord Ruler talks about how armies were useless against the deepness. At first I thought this meant that the armies hadn't been able to defeat it. But look at the wording. He says, "The swords of my armies are useless." What's more useless than trying to swing a sword at mist?
She pointed at another paragraph.
It left destruction in its wake, right? Countless thousands died because of it. But he never says that the deepness actually attacked them. He says that they died because of it. Maybe we've just been looking at this the wrong way all along. Those people weren't crushed or eaten. They starved to death because their land was slowly being swallowed by the mists.
Sazed studied her paper. She seemed so certain. Did she know nothing of proper research techniques? Of questioning, of studying, of postulating and devising answers?
Of course she doesn't, Sazed chastised himself. She grew up on the streets. She doesn't use research techniques. She just uses instinct. And she's usually right.
He smoothed the paper again, reading its passages.
Lady Vin, did you write this yourself?
She flushed.
Why is everybody so surprised about that?
It just doesn't seem in your nature, Lady Vin.
You people have corrupted me, she said.
Look, there isn't a single comment on this sheet that contradicts the idea that the deepness was missed.
Not contradicting a point and proving it are different things, Lady Vin.
She waved indifferently.
I'm right, Sazed. I know I am.
What about this point, then? Sazed asked, pointing to a line.
The hero implies that he can sense ascensions to the deepness. The mist isn't alive.
Well, it does swirl around someone using allomancy.
That isn't the same thing, I think, Sazed said. He says that the deepness was mad, destructively insane, evil.
Vin paused.
There is something, Sazed, she admitted.
He frowned. She pointed at another section of notes.
Do you recognize these paragraphs?
It isn't shadow, the words read. This dark thing that follows me, the thing that only I can see, it isn't really a shadow. It is blackish and translucent, but it doesn't have a shadow-like solid outline. It's insubstantial, wispy and formless, like it's made out of a dark fog. Or mist, perhaps.
Yes, Lady Vin, Sazed said. The hero saw a creature following him. It attacked one of his companions, I think.
Vin looked in his eyes.
I've seen it, Sazed.
He felt a chill.
It's out there, she said. Every night in the mists, watching me. I can feel it with allomancy. And if I get close enough, I can see it. As if formed from the mist itself. Insubstantial, yet somehow still there.
Sazed sat quietly for a moment, not certain what to think.
You think me mad, Vin accused. No, Lady Vin, he said quietly. I don't think any of us are in a position to call such things madness. Not considering what is happening. Just, are you certain?
She nodded firmly.
But, Sazed said, even if this is true, it does not answer my question. The logbook author saw that same creature, and he didn't refer to it as the deepness. It was not the deepness then. The deepness was something else, something dangerous, something he could feel as evil.
That's the secret, then, Vin said. We have to figure out why he spoke of the mists that way. Then we'll know.
Know what, Lady Vin? Sazed asked.
Vin paused, then looked away. She didn't answer, instead turning to a different topic.
Sazed, the hero never did what he was supposed to. Rashik killed him. And when Rashik took the power at the well, he didn't give it up like he was supposed to. He kept it for himself.
True, Sazed said. Vin paused again.
And the mists have started killing people. They've started coming during the day. It's like things are repeating again. So maybe that means that the Hero of Ages will have to come again.
She glanced back at him, looking a bit embarrassed?
Ah, Sazed thought, sensing her implication.
She saw things in the mists. The previous hero had seen the same things.
I am not certain that is a valid statement, Lady Vin.
She snorted.
Why can't you just come out and say you're wrong, like regular people? I apologize, Lady Vin. I have had much training as a servant, and we are taught to be non-confrontational. Nevertheless, I do not think that you are wrong. However, I also think that perhaps you haven't fully considered your position.
Vin shrugged.
What makes you think that the Hero of Ages will return?
I don't know. Things that happen. Things I feel. The mists are coming again, and someone needs to stop them.
Sazed ran his fingers across his translated section of the rubbing, looking over its words.
You don't believe me, Vin said. It isn't that, Lady Vin, Sazed said. It's just that I am not prone to rushing to decisions.
But you've thought about the Hero of Ages, haven't you? Vin said. He was part of your religion. The lost religion of Terrace, the thing you keepers were founded to try and discover.
That is true, Sazed admitted. However, we do not know much about the prophecies that our ancestors used to find their hero. Besides, the reading I've been doing lately suggests that there was something wrong with their interpretations. If the greatest theologians of pre-ascension Terrace were unable to properly identify their hero, how are we supposed to do so?
Vin sat quietly.
I shouldn't have brought it up, she finally said. No, Lady Vin. Please don't think that. I apologize. Your theories have great merit. I simply have a scholar's mind, and must question and consider information when I am given it. I am far too fond of arguing, I think.
Vin looked up, smiling slightly.
Another reason you never made a good terrace steward? Undoubtedly, he said with a sigh. My attitude always tends to cause conflicts with the others of my order.
Like Tyndall? Vin asked. She didn't sound happy when she heard that you'd told us about Ferrokemi. Sazed nodded.
For a group dedicated to knowledge, the Keepers can be rather stingy with information about their powers. When the Lord Ruler still lived, when Keepers were hunted, the caution was warranted, I think. But now that we are free from that, my brethren and sisters seem to have found the habit of secrecy a difficult one to break.
Vin nodded.
Tyndall doesn't seem to like you very much. She says that she came because of your suggestion, but every time someone mentions you, she seems to get
cold. Sazed sighed. Did Tyndall dislike him? He thought perhaps that her inability to do so was a large part of the problem.
She is simply disappointed in me, Lady Vin. I'm not sure how much you know of my history, but I had been working against the Lord Ruler for some 10 years before Kelsier recruited me. The other Keepers thought that I endangered my copper mines and the very Order itself. They believed that the Keepers should remain quiet, waiting for the day when the Lord Ruler fell, but not seeking to make it happen.
Seems a bit cowardly to me, Vin said.
Ah, but it was a very prudent course. You see, Lady Vin, had I been captured, there are many things I could have revealed. The names of other Keepers, the location of our safe houses, the means by which we managed to hide ourselves in terrace culture. My brethren worked for many decades to make the Lord Ruler think that Ferrokemi had finally been exterminated.